Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Kim Dixon, who works with helping mental health and addictions in Prince George. So when we're looking at our a loved one in the family, what are some of the things that we kind of look for or watch to see if they are in need?
So there's two things we can do as family members or just caring community members. We can watch for signs. So these are things that we can see. And so some of the things might be a change from whatever the individual's baseline is. So this is when relationship becomes important. So, you know, keeping in touch with our family members, knowing our neighbors, that type of thing. And so I gave a couple of examples. Social withdrawal is a huge one, because if you're dealing with issues inside of your brain, it makes it difficult for you to get out and interact with others. So social withdrawal is a huge red flag. Lack of hygiene can be another one. Again, things we typically take for granted. Poor performance at school or at work. Absences, obviously, from those places. Again, withdrawing from things you would normally take joy in, like sports activities or hobbies or family events, those kinds of things. So the key is understanding or knowing what a person's baseline is and if there's a change, like more sleep or lack of sleep or more eating or lack of eating. So things that we can see. The other thing that's very helpful are symptoms, and those are the things that a person is experiencing on the inside. And this is where having an ability to listen to how another person is feeling is very helpful. So a person may describe feeling sad or feeling confused or just expressing feelings that don't typically show up for them. But we have to create space for a person to share those. So we need to be listening and asking for those.
Mm-hmm. And there has been, in decades past, stigma around mental health as if it's different than physical health. How is that attitude changing, or do you think it really is?
You know what? I think it's very individual. I think there's still a tremendous amount of stigma out there around mental illness, and not just from the outside. I think as individuals, we carry a lot of shame around the possibility that we might be experiencing a mental illness, and for a whole variety of reasons. And that can create fear and prevent us from seeking help. So it's really about, it still goes back to building relationships and getting to know each other and getting to know individuals who live with illness to understand what their experience is and to understand that there's really nothing to be afraid of. And if we're not afraid, then we can act in a more sort of supportive and helpful way.
Mm-hmm. Or nothing to be afraid of, to be able to voice those fears and walk through them.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if a person or a family feels unsafe doing that in their own sort of circle, that's where a person and an organization like myself can be helpful, because I don't have any fear around any mental illness. And so you can say anything, and I'm not going to feel any kind of fear or be in any kind of judgment. And so to be able to support you to get the help and education that you need.
That is the wonderful support. How would you speak to enabling versus just listening and being on side? How do we get where that takes up our whole lives to help somebody with addiction or mental illness?
Yeah. You know what? As a family member, been there, done that, I call it the tsunami effect. There are times in our lives as family members, and probably as individuals in recovery as well, that we feel like there's nothing in our world except illness and addiction. And it's very much a process for us as family members to be able to get out from underneath that great big tsunami wave. And be able to continue to support our loved one, but not be drowning at the same time. And that really, again, speaks to the need to get emotional support to understand that we do have the right and the responsibility to set some boundaries and to find some time for ourselves as well as supporting our loved one. So it's a process. We can't just let go. It's difficult for us as family members to sometimes let our loved one go through the experience. It can be painful to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have permission to play and do artwork and go for a swim or do whatever keeps us well.
Absolutely. Not only a right, but a responsibility. And that's the irony, is that if as family members and community members, we don't take care of our, not just physical health, but our mental, emotional, and social and spiritual health, then we cannot be present for those of us in need. So our first right and responsibility is to ourselves so that we can be present for others.
Mm-hmm. So it goes back to the adage of the old oxygen mask on yourself first. Do you see any subtle differences between 12-step recovery, which has been around forever, and SMART recovery?
No, they're complementary. They both offer tools to individuals dealing with addictions, both as individuals in recovery and family members. So I think, there are a couple of resources that families and individuals can access, take what they want and leave the rest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little bit about that, some of the things that are offered just as far as a community place for people to come to and break bread together? And, I think you've got some yoga classes.
Yeah, so we have an ongoing family support group, which is open, which people come and go based on need and availability. So that happens the first and third Wednesday of every month at the hospital here in Prince George. People can call or email if people want more information, or they can just show up for that. And then the education sessions are scheduled, and they can check our website at bcsspg.org. for details of upcoming workshops.
Mm-hmm. And you would prefer people touch base with you first before they just show up at the workshops, or is it?
I never say no to anybody. I have a bit of a problem with boundaries, so I'm a work in progress. Often people like to make a connection first, just to have any questions answered. But if somebody showed up, they would be more than welcome always.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Are your programs running year round, or are they kind of seasonal?
The family support group goes year-round, so I think I maybe take 1 week off in the summertime, maybe another week around Christmas. The rest of the time we go year-round. The workshops we generally do in the fall and the winter. I find by springtime we all want to get out and hug a few trees, and that's good for us as well.
Mm-hmm. So there's so many tools that you have available to families and people in with mental health issues and addictions. How do you see this being something that will keep growing, like as the addictions and mental health issues become bigger in our cities? Is it something that just has to keep up with it? Because it is a growing area, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I would certainly hope so. I mean, there's more and more pressure on our formal healthcare system. And so, again, for me, it's a very cost-effective thing to build capacity in ourselves to support each other. So I will certainly continue to do it as long as I can and to encourage others to do the same. It's up to policymakers about whether they continue to fund that, but certainly from a cost-effective point of view, it seems likely that it will continue and grow, Kathy.
Fantastic. Who are some of your favorite mentors or authors that help you along this journey?
Well, I mean, I have some personal mentors, but I'm thinking of ones that would be helpful to your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of probably my all-time favorite book and resources called I Am Not Sick and I Don't Need Help by a Dr. Xavier with an X, Amador. And if listeners are Google the LEAP Institute, They can get a little bit of information before buying the book if they want to do that. But Dr. Amodar was also, or is, a family member, and he offers a wonderful communication tool to help us listen more effectively, not just to our loved ones with mental illness, but to each other. I would highly recommend it for anyone who wants to enrich their personal relationships, not just with those who are living with a mental illness. So I'd say that's my favorite tool. Another book that I like is called Being Mortal, and I'm afraid I can't remember the name of the author. It's written by a surgeon. It talks about our journey, the human experience from birth through death, and that's is a very powerful tool in terms of guiding my practice and the work that I do in supporting families as well. So those are a couple of resources that I would...
Thank you so much, Kim, and thank you so much for all the years of work you've done in the community to help reach out to people in a non-judgmental way and help healing begin through the mental wellness programs that you're providing. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Kathy.
We'd also like to thank our producer, Alan Wishart, and we'd like to thank all the community stations across Canada that carry our program. Have a healthy and happy day.